Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is one of the most exciting newer acts on the stand-up scene, who I got the pleasure to meet at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year. Their clout was further proven by them being a contender last year at the very prestigious So You Think You're Funny competition. Please welcome Pravanya Pillay.
Hi.
Hello, lovely Hi. To catch up with you post-Fringe. We're both back at home. We're comfy once again.
It turns out that was not a comfortable place.
Have you caught up on your sleep?
Yeah, I did. I slept for 2 days with my sleep. Yeah, that was it. I just got up for meals and then I went back to sleep.
It's fair, because if people are unfamiliar, it's doing a show every day of the week for nearly a month.
Yeah.
It's intense.
Yeah. It was a late show as well, So it was my sleeping pattern is still really out of whack. Trying to jolt that back into place. But yeah.
Yeah. One of the times I bumped into you, I think I complimented your makeup as usual. And you said, oh, yeah, at this point, I think I'm just painting the optimism on.
I don't know how I was. I was like a robot. I was just like, the way I was doing it was so funny. That's really funny. I don't remember.
There you go. Keep that line. Use that. And so, before we get into it, give me some top notes of your dating history and where you're at now.
Well, okay, so, like, historically, my dating history has been awful. Like, the people I've dated have been terrible. And, no offense to them. I think it's because I used to do a lot of improv, and I think it attracts a certain type of guy. Yeah, so off the bat, it hasn't been, like, the greatest. But, yeah, but then when I stopped dating improv guys, it really started looking up, essentially.
There you go. Sometimes is it a type or is it a pattern we need to get out of, right?
Yeah.
And so do you have the thing now where you still have to bat them off? Do they still come along to your shows?
I've never dated. Well, okay, so I've dated one person who came to my show and was like in the audience. Yeah, so I dated them for a while. And then I've never dated anyone else from the audience before. Because it feels weird. It feels, like, odd.
Yeah.
And I only dated this person because they were, like, a friend of a friend, rather than because they were in the audience. And it feels like the worst way to pick up someone, I think.
Yeah, and there's maybe that, like, added bit of safety if, yeah, they know someone. There's that bit of accountability of, at the very least, I can tell you off via this friend. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's a risk. And also, I think, you know, you definitely have that thing we've talked about before on the show of the version of you on stage. They can get very invested in. And is that reality at all?
No, especially, I think more so now that, like, at the start, it was like a really different person. So I think to get invested in that person who they saw on stage and then to actually meet me, that was actually what I found with the last guy I dated who had seen me on stage. Like, I found, like, he had an idea of who I was, but it didn't actually match up very well with who I actually was. So I guess the trick there is if you want to date someone in the audience, you have to be a very authentic performer. That's the lesson I learned.
Yeah.
You have to be better at stand-up if you want to date people in the audience, essentially.
Well, it's a tricky thing, right? Because in theory, a lot of the best comedy is based in truth. But not exact truth. It's not just going up there and reading out your shopping list for the day. You know, there's got to be something to it. And am I right in intuiting that for yourself, there's a certain amount of offstage wanting to kind of people please that maybe doesn't come across on stage? Because I feel like your comedy persona, you're very much the cool girl, to use an American phrase. You're down, you have niche interests, you have a lot of opinions on corporate mergers, and then maybe offstage, you're a bit more real, but you're maybe a bit more angsty.
I would say that, like, so all the topics, like, so I'm actually in the middle of, like, really shaping up how I do stand-up anyway, because I think there's a roof to doing it with that persona, that, like, cool girl persona. I think I've hit the roof with it as well, because it's not really me. It's quite far from me. I think the stuff that I'm talking about is me. Like, I want to talk about corporate mergers, and I want to talk about, like, I don't know, the Millennium Dome. I always want to talk about the Millennium Dome. I'm here for the Millennium. But it's like the topics are the same. So if you're watching it and you're like, oh, yeah, she's cool, I like the topic she's talking about, I'd love to go in deeper on the Millennium Dome and the impact that it had, and how she thinks it's a foreshadow for Iraq. But I think the way I was talking about it isn't, like, dreamy at all. But yeah, does that answer the question? I was talking about the Millennium Dome a lot.
No, now I'm just intrigued in that. What is it about the Millennium Dome?
I like everything around it. I like big public projects that are kind of where everyone's invested, but then they're kind of like a little bit rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
At that, I feel like it is really, really British to invest loads of money in like a big public project that everyone hates. Like, I think that's a really like quintessentially British thing. And it's just very interesting. And it's just a symbol of New Labour as well, which I find interesting on a larger scale. But yeah.
Fair. There you go. See, this is maybe the side of you they don't get on stage. Like, how are you?
They do the riffs. When I riff, they do. They get that in the riff.
So before we hear more about possibly riffs on the Millennium Dome, tell me a story you have from the archive of dating.
Okay. So, well, I feel like this story is like actually like really nice. It's like a very nice story. Okay. How it happened. I was at a party and I met one of my friend's friends, and we got on immediately. Like, we got on really well immediately, and then New Labour came up. I don't know how. It just came up. Someone brought it up. Someone brought up New Labour. I don't know.
I couldn't
have possibly. And then I was like, oh yeah, there's this really great documentary. And he was like, oh, what is it? And then I recommended my favorite documentary, which is the Blair Brown New Labour Revolution. And he was like, oh, I've already seen it. So I was like, okay, this guy is great. I really fancy this guy. Because the New Labour thing is kind of important.
Supposedly, like, our generation are the ones that really care about politics in a different way. Like, supposedly that was a thing that in previous generations you just compromise or just not talk about. Whereas, like, that is so integral. It's right there in a lot of the dating apps now of, like, people declaring their political, you know, affiliations. Because, yeah, people do want to feel like they're on the same side in their household.
Yeah, no, I think that Alistair Campbell podcast does so well. But, so then I had to go to like a different party. So I went to a different party, and then we came back to that original party, and like we started talking again, and then New Labour came up again. I don't know how. I don't know if it was New Labour came up again. So then, yeah, and then I mentioned how for like self-care, I draw Labour politicians because it's just like when I'm feeling stressed or something, I just like sketch Labour politicians. So then I like that came up, and then he was like, oh, you've got to show me them. So I showed it to him, and they're like not very good. Like, it's not great sketches at all. Because part of the reason why I do it is because I have to like let go of being a perfectionist. So like they're like purposefully quite bad, and I do them in pen so that I can't like obsess over it. I showed them to him, and then I was like, oh man, I'm like a creep. Like, this is a weird thing for someone to do. And he was like, no, you're really unapologetically yourself, and like, it's really great.
And you're like, really, is that a compliment? I'm not sure.
I took it as a compliment. I have to say that my heart melted. Like, I was like, oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. And then we went out to the smoking area. And when we went out to the smoking area, we kissed. And as we were kissing, Bohemian Rhapsody was playing. And then everyone started applauding. Like, everyone started clapping. And I thought it was because we had reached like the guitar bit, the guitar solo, Bohemian Rhapsody. And I just assumed that like everyone, because like white people love that song. So I was like, okay, well, they're just applauding Brian May and the guitar riff. But they were clapping for us. And when I realized, I died. Like, I was so embarrassed. And then there's,
did they think it was a proposal, or was just everyone invested in this love story?
We were in a bar. So, like, why were they so surprised that two people kissing? It's not the bar. But it was, yeah, it was really weird. But then what was really weird was this old man came up to him, while everyone was clapping. This old man walked up to him and, like, shook his hand. It was like, yeah, I know. I was like, well done, lad. And then, like, walked away, that was the strangest bit. And then, yeah, and then we were just like, oh, we should probably go back inside now. So then we went inside.
Was this in London?
Yeah, it was.
I feel like this is the reason why it's correct that people don't talk to each other in London. They can't be trusted.
Yeah, I know. It's what they do. They, like, I'm weird. But that old man was like, has such just great energy. Like, what? He was just kind of like by himself in the smoking area.
Waiting for someone to kiss.
Yes, and then he could. He had a real main character. I saw people applauding. And he was like, I got to get in on this.
I got to one up that like, behavior. Wow.
Yeah.
What happened next? Like, we've been together ever since. Seven children, four houses.
No, we haven't. We decided to just be friends, actually.
I have a story a little bit similar to that where I once was doing, I used to do modelling work and I had a photo shoot with someone where it was for a wedding photographer. And at first it was really weird that people in the street were like getting involved and like, you know, grinning at us, that then escalated to them congratulating us, to then a few people like waving and cheering, and you're like, okay. And then, you know, and then you start getting quite into it. You start playing to the audience at a certain point, and there might have been a bit of a mutual crush going on. So it was a fun coincidence that we'd ended up on this shoot together out of everyone at the agency. The catch came when we went for a date slash drink afterwards, and it was so much pressure because we'd already seen our life flash before our eyes, and there's no way to step that back and be like, so do you have any siblings? Like, it was too late. Yeah. And so actually it just ended up being like quite overwhelming. And that's what it sounds like a little bit, that you had your big moment and then you're like, maybe the audience were more invested than we were.
I think the pressure that the old man put on us. I really think it would be really funny if, like, when we decided to be friends, the old man had just appeared. It was like, every arc is important. friendship been lovely. And shook his hand again. Like, that would have been a nice little, that would have been a nice little circle to it. But
and did you end up really being friends?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I think so.
That's good. Yeah, because I've in my life progressed from fake friend zones to real friend zones. So that's the kind of progress I'm making in my love life.
Wait, what does that mean?
I'm taking my wins where I can, as in like when people say, oh, you know, let's be friends. I think we'd be better as friends. In the same way somebody bumps into like an ex-work colleague that they've never seen since for a reason. And they're like, oh, we should definitely go for coffee sometime. Yeah. With that kind of energy.
Now it's people
immediately like hitting me up the next day being like, so when are we hanging out as friends?
I think it's because like friendship is underrated. Like, we obviously got on really well, and it wasn't like we're not meant to be romantically together, like that's clear, but we get on so well, so it's such a shame to just be like, okay, well, that's that then. Because, when we could be friends. I'm a big fan of friendship. I think that, like, friendship is really important. I will say that the loves of my life are probably, like, my close friends. And, like, I don't, much like Carrie from Sex and the City, the loves of my life are my Miranda, Charlotte, and Samantha. And guys are great, but they come and go. But Miranda, Samantha, and Charlotte, they're always there.
Yeah. I definitely relate to you on that one. Well, you know, I sometimes get cynical about it and I'm like, what about the return on investment? You know, all these dates, plenty of them are awful. But like generally when I decide I want to be friends with somebody, I tend to be right. Like my picker is a lot better on the friendship side. And then also, you know, once you've got that connection with somebody, the chances of it lasting are much better. And then if it doesn't work out, the heartbreak is much smaller. You know, unless it's like a long-term friend.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think it's like way more intense when I fight with my friends. I think because it happens much, it's like a much rare thing to happen. That when it does, it just feels so much more painful. And you feel like, I don't know, it feels like you're... Because I guess like when with a romantic relationship, like there's just always... there's a 50-50 chance that this will work out. And you go in knowing that there might be a point when you never see each other again, and suddenly you were so close and suddenly you're not anymore. And you kind of go in with those expectations. So, but I think with friends in your head, you're like, okay, well, this person will be in my life forever. And it might be in a different way. So you might see them a bit less or something. So if you do slide and if you do fall out, I've found that like the friendship breakups are so much more painful. and all consuming than like breakup.
Interesting. And do you feel like part of that might be that you're kind of going in trusting to a friendship and maybe a bit more guarded when it's someone romantic?
Yeah, to be honest, probably. Yeah, because I'm thinking like my first ever breakup, that was like horrific. That was really painful. That was like, it was so stereotypical. It was so like, I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep. I was like, literally, it was like the songs. I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is really cliche. So embarrassing that it's having such a cliche response to a breakup. But yeah, that was really intense. But yeah, and then after that, it was kind of, they were kind of less intense. So maybe it is the trust thing, because then less painful. But yeah.
Yeah. I think there could be something to that. And, you know, to an extent, it makes a lot of sense. You know, there's, for me, generally, I found a certain reliability within my friendships. And I really enjoy friendship. And I would be of the strong belief that in many ways, like, that should be the basis. Like, I think there's nothing more toxic in the dating pool than someone with no friends determined that this one person is going to be the answer to their loneliness. Like, let's be honest, if that person is a man with no tangible social connections, but determined to dump his trauma on a woman and be like, you are responsible for my feelings now.
Yeah, there's like a whole generation of men who just don't have any friends. And because they don't have any friends, I feel like so many of their back comes from that. Yeah. No, okay, just to bring it back. The perfect example. But in the first movie, when Big leaves, spoiler alert, when Big leaves Carrie at the altar when he guilts her.
I think anyone that's going to see it has seen it by now. I think he's spoiled.
Yeah, but he's in the car and he's alone. All he has is his driver. He has no one there. And he's like, oh, I can't do this. He's calling Carrie on her wedding day to be like, I don't know what to do. And I was watching it being like, he just needs one friend. Literally one person to sat next to him so that he turns to them and is like, oh, I'm really stressed. I don't know what to do. And they're like, yeah, it's normal to be stressed on your wedding day. That's fine. And then that's that. And then the whole movie doesn't happen. Do you know what I mean? Like, one friend. If he had one friend. Yeah. Then I think that it does make all the difference. It does just help with, like, decision-making. Because then you're saying it out loud to someone. You can hear yourself saying it. You're going to get their feedback and their response. And they know you and they have a bit of perspective on the situation. Friends are actually an important part of dating.
And in many ways, kind of, you know, strong friendships are a practice of like how to show up for someone and be consistent and be honest about how we feel. And, you know, if we're doing all of those things, I think it's, the power of friendship, but then also really prioritizing friendship makes such a difference as well. You know, and if I think about like my last breakup, for example, I remember like a few people that didn't know me as well kind of jump to this narrative of like, so I was in a relationship with someone who was in an open marriage. And so some people that didn't know me as well were like, oh, well, like, how are you feeling? Because you're on your own now, but they've still got each other. And that was so far from my reality because like, it was a fairly new relationship anyway. And I, you know, went home, like literally like one of my mates stayed up late to make sure that he could like call me after work and check I was okay.
Yeah,
I went back to my flatmate and told her all about it. I chilled with my cat and had a nice evening in. Had two other friends like call to check I was okay. Like loads of people like rallied around me. And one of the things that really stuck out during the relationship was not just my friends, but also like publicly via this show. People knew about the relationship and knew that I was in an open relationship. And only one of their friends knew that in their entire life. And even she was quite judgmental about it. And so it was so interesting to be like, it's really kind of company is what you make of it. Because they couldn't, like, they found it continually baffling that I was so open with my friends and my friends were also supportive. And I'm there thinking, why do you have friends that wouldn't be?
That's so true. I agree with that. Yeah.
So I think we've got it sorted. And I mean, this raises the question then of what is it you're looking for beyond friendship? Does it feel like there's something not there with your current relationships you'd look for within a romantic relationship?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I want to fall in love. And, like, you know, I'd love to be in a relationship and I'm a huge romantic. So
me too. I'm just tired.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I want like the whole, you know, the whole rom-com experience. Like that would be lovely. That'd be great. Yeah, but I guess it's kind of, but my, like, it, that's like a nice thing for her and would be fun. It would definitely be fun. But I, yeah, I don't know. I think if it doesn't, I'm not like.
Friends a necessity and a relationship is the extra for you?
Maybe. I think it changes depending on what part of life you're in. I think right now, friends is a necessity and like a romantic relationship would be like, oh, a fun extra. And if it wasn't a fun extra, like draining, and if it like took loads of my energy and if I felt really stressed by it, then I wouldn't, it's not something I would want, really. Yeah. And I also think, I'm also a big believer that like it's so much better to be alone than to be with the wrong person as well, just for the sake of it, which I think lots of people are now, to be honest. That's not really fresh information.
No, but it's nice that people are coming round to that way of thinking. And even like the way we reframe things of like, are you alone or like, are you single?
Yeah.
You know, are you independent?
Yeah.
Are you looking for someone versus being like, I'm alone and therefore I'm lonely, I feel like has been the implication that we're now questioning more.
Yeah. So I guess like I love love and I think that like, you know, I think romantic love is great and being in love is amazing. Just describe love as lovely. But yeah, I think right now I feel like, you know, like my friends are the people I talk to the most, almost constant communication with them, and it feels a bit jarring to prioritize like a romantic relationship over a friendship at this stage of my life. But then I think that like, you know, like as I get older, then that probably won't feel so jarring. Like maybe it'll feel normal or maybe it won't. I don't know. But right now at this stage of my life, I think like I definitely would always prioritize friendships over a romantic relationship.
I can see that. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, my version of that would be like, I don't like the assumption that someone is dating you and therefore they're like the top priority in your life automatically. It's like, I don't know, everyone else has like, you know, showed up for me. I nearly said worked for it. I'm like, no, I don't mean that. I mean, like, other people in my life have been consistent enough that they prioritize me and I prioritize them. It's a thing that's built. So therefore, the idea of like, you're the one I kiss, therefore you're the most important, feels a little bit presumptuous.
Yeah. I like the idea of like in all the relationships in my life, like my cousin and her husband, actually both my cousins and their partners, like they have like really full social lives and things and like lots of extended friends, and I spend a lot of time with them as well. But like the way they are with each other is, it still feels like a really full life. It just feels like, I guess it's like their partner is their best friend, which I think is quite nice. But also I think you should have like a best friend outside of your partner. But I do think it's really nice to have that. I would say that I think all my ideas around romance are actually like really ill-formed. Like I don't think I have. I think it's all like very vague and flowery, and I see something and I'm like, oh, that's nice, I really like that. But then I see something else. And usually it's two things that I've seen in the same episode of Sex and the City. And make me want opposite things.
But look, I think we're all like that. You know, the more we dig into this stuff, the more you're like, it's all so fallible.
Yeah.
You know, how can any of us have the answers? I mean, like, I ask...
What do I want?
I've been asking myself lately, like, because I date, you know, individuals, but also couples. There has been part of me asking myself recently of like, is it always that you fancy the couple, or is it sometimes you just like that relationship and you'd like one similar?
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, oh, that's a nice example of love in the world. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've not had a good history of creating that. Maybe I jump into that.
Yeah. It's like ready for you. Yeah, I get that. It's like similar to like, do you fancy them or do you want to be them? Which I always conflated, like with my celebrity crushes. Like I loved David Tennant, so I tried to dress like him. And then the time I like made myself like a Peaky Blinder, because I was really obsessed with Peaky Blinders. Like I got the haircut and everything.
Oh, wow. That's commitment. And tell me, do you have an idea in your head of like who your person is? Like any kind of personality traits, any sort of red flags that you've been there, done that?
Yeah. I mean, like so many red flags. Yeah, I think like fundamentally like kind, like really kind, like really is the main thing, and then attractive, good looking. But then I think like if they're kind, then they usually are good looking, to be honest. And then I don't know. Okay, so a big red flag for me is, like, I think someone who kind of doesn't, like, look after them.
I could see it behind your eyes.
Yeah. No, so, but it's like they eat, like, really badly all the time. Mm. Or, like, I dated one guy who would, like, have ice cream for breakfast and then, like, a whole tub of ice cream for breakfast and then, like, not eat again. And, like, I'd just be like, what's happening? So I think if someone is like, if they have, basically, I think three meals, if they have three meals, this is such a low bar. They have to be tired and they have to have three meals a day. And I think those are like two signs.
It's a low bar and get plenty of people don't meet it. So I understand. No, but I don't know if we have this.
Asking for much.
Yeah, I don't know if we have this in common, but I see things like that and I'm like, oh, that's going to become my problem. Like, one of the big things for me is, like, if people hate their job, like, I'm going to have to hear about a job that they don't even like, first of all. And second of all, I'm probably going to get invested in, like, okay, they're not job hunting for themselves. I'm good at job hunting. I guess I do it.
Yeah.
That's not a good dynamic. Yeah, I don't want, like, that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it is that, like, you want to look after yourself and that should be your priority. And then... Yeah,
well, it's like, it's the difference between supporting them looking after themselves, you know, you being like a healthy unit that is that support there, versus like, oh, I caretaking for them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is literally exactly what it is. That's what the three meals a day thing is. Like, if they can eat three meals a day, or even go out and buy a sandwich, like, no pressure on that, then I just feel like they're kind of are self-reliant.
Basically. Yeah, but I mean, no, but...
low bar.
No, but there is really something there because, like, if, you know, if they value themselves enough to look after themselves properly, that's a good sign and would suggest to me that they're also going to look after you, you know, if they've had that practice on themselves.
Yeah, if they value themselves as well, like, I think it's good to value yourself. Yeah, exactly. Because it's harder to build something with someone if they don't like themselves. It's difficult. Yeah, that is tough. But it's all their fault in a lot of the situations, but it still is really tough. But I just want an easy ride, like, to be tough for me. Oh, things are difficult.
Is that the big reveal? You're like, yep, somebody that's done all the work. I get to come in and be messy. They have plenty of time for
that. I have a job in the creative arts, like...
Somebody needs to be stable in this dynamic.
For like one of the big four.
No, I've seriously thought about this before where sometimes like I see people like buzzing around the city in their like business attire and I'm like, oh, is that hot to me? Or do I just like the idea of like someone in the dynamic having stability?
Yeah, I know.
I get to be the fun, chaotic weirdo with the strange... work history and they go to the office every day like a real human.
Yeah, but it is nice to have. It's also classic, isn't it? Creative arts GF, finance BF.
Yeah, I mean, when your parents ask about your career, you're like, oh, well, he just got a promotion. So as we start to wrap up then, I want to ask you about some of the work you've done outside of comedy, because I know a big focus for you has been empowering young people of colour, and that kind of links to what we were talking about in terms of self-worth.
Yeah, definitely. It just came from being in like very white creative spaces and like often being like the only person of colour in the room or being like one of two or three. And when I used to live in Bristol, I had a really great job there working for this charity, well, social enterprise that supported young people to get their dream jobs, and it largely worked with like young people of color from less advanced backgrounds, and that was like one of the best jobs I had. I did outreach, so I just got to meet like loads of really great young people who had like these big dreams and loads of like really good ideas from all different fields as well, like not just creative. And and it was just about like resources and where people's attentions were, and a lot of them just needed like a little bit more kind of nurturing and attention paid to them that a lot of people take for granted. And then I started running these theatre workshops for like young people of colour, and they would end in like a big showcase at the Bristol Vic. And yeah, they were just really great. The idea was that it was like a space for POC people to sort of come and be themselves, and they could be silly, and there wasn't any pressure to do anything, and they didn't have to necessarily be like stereotypically creative. Like they, like some of the people who enjoyed the workshops the most were like just STEM students as well. Like they just loved that they just excel. They just did such a good job because they could just have the space to be themselves. And that was the main thing, really. And the showcase at the end, like if you were really interested in performing and you wanted to do it, then I kind of like trained up like a little cast to do a show. Yeah, and it was really good. And like another really great thing that we did was we got loads of like free theater and museum tickets from lots of different organizations. So I would take them to theater and to like museum exhibitions and stuff, and got to do some really great shows. Because I would pick carefully, because this was like the first time they were going to the theater, so I wasn't going to take them to see, you know, like something that they would just disengage from. So it was. But it meant that you got to see like a lot of cool experimental things. But yeah, that was really great. That is something that I'm still like super passionate about. I think it became challenging because it was kind of like trying, because I guess the metaphor is that you want to help people up the ladder, but then it was like I was at a certain point on the ladder, like relatively low, to be honest, myself. And so then it was kind of like I would help them up to where I was, and then there's just a roof, like, and if I wanted, I could try and throw them ahead of me, but like that's not like there's no support then. I'm not there. There's like no support, and also I can't guarantee anything. What I found was like I put them in touch with like people and institutions and stuff, but those institutions sometimes didn't follow up, or they'd be like excited and then they'd lose interest, or it would be like I couldn't guarantee that they weren't going to be a token in that space and that kind of stuff. It just took a lot of energy that I didn't have, and so I still really want to do all of that stuff, but I kind of want to do it with like a little bit more power and backing behind me. Mm-hmm. So that I can do it on like a wider scale and kind of like get people further along as well into the creative arts. But yeah, that's kind of that.
Yeah, no, that's lovely. And I feel like, you know, on an individual level, you're very much continuing that by the ways in which you make space for yourself in the comedy scene and, you know, show up in what is still an overwhelmingly white male space. You know, like I remember saying to you at the Fringe, like one of our customers had said to me about like it was just really nice to see a lineup where it was majority brown people on the bill, because she was like,
yeah,
I'm just not used to it, so I'm gonna go to that show. Yeah. She literally said somebody's gonna represent me even if I dislike the other one. I'm sure she did, but it's important. And you know, I've like in researching kind of some of your background, like I very much sort of see how like, you know, there were certain things like being the only in your year at school and things like that, that now you get to like be part of kind of changing that in an industry and showing up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was more. Well, I went because I live in Milton Keynes and it's really close to London. So, and I moved to Milton Keynes when I was like 8. And so I had like, it was super multicultural. So it was like, it was really great. I just had like loads of friends from like all over. And yeah, Hemel Hempstead, where I was born, I guess, was quite white. I remember like primary, so that like part of primary school was like, that was when I was the only Indian kid in like the whole year. But yeah, and then, yeah, but Milton Keynes and my secondary school were like super diverse, which was really great. But it was really jarring when I came to Bristol University. And it was really weird that jump, because it just went from being like, kind of multicultural, not to bring up New Labour, but like Blair's multicultural Britain to like not Blair's multicultural Britain. Don't look up Blair's multicultural Britain because he's backtracked, but also, it was a jump. It was a real jump. And that's kind of where I first noticed suddenly like the impact of being the only person of colour in those spaces, like creative spaces, and the responsibility that was on you, and like how important it was to like not be the only person of colour, so that you didn't have to burden all of that. But
you're not labelled as like the representative then.
Yeah, exactly.
And so as we wrap up then, we each need to choose our rules of the game. So something that you try and live by in dating or relationships. Do you have one in mind already?
Yeah, kind of, I think. Okay, so I think my rule is that I don't know anything. And I'm just gonna go with, you just have to like be very responsive to your vibes and what your vibes are telling you. Because often, like, if they're saying no, they're the reason and you trust it. But also, I just don't know anything. I have no rules, so I don't know anything.
It's a paradox. And I love that disclaimer at the 11th hour of the podcast. Anything I've said could be wrong. Who's to say?
I do think that everything I've said could be wrong, and that I could, like, in a month, listen to it and be like, wow.
Who was that person? Well, you know, I have something that I think we're on consensus of. If we've established anything, it's prioritize friendship. You know, that's a really great basis for going out into the dating world, because I think you learn a lot about how to connect with people. And at the very least, you have a lovely group of people to come back to tell about the awful date or the horrible breakup. You can talk about that guy that only eats ice cream whilst you eat ice cream with your friends, whilst you go through by the pint. It's great. All right, we'll wrap up there. Thank you so much. If people want to find your shows, come see you live, experience you on the internet, where did they go?
They can just follow me on Instagram. It's Pravania Pillay 69.
Because comedy.
I guess. Exactly. It's funny. It's hilarious. Classic joke. And I don't know when this is coming out, so I don't know what shows I will have. But if you follow me online, they'll be there in my link tree that I manage myself.
Lovely. Is this an awful time to tell you that I tried clicking on your link tree earlier and it said too many requests? So you're obviously just so popular that you broke link tree.
Maybe I was adding something to it. Oh, okay. I want to be what it was. But I think too many requests.
Broke link tree, or maybe you were just happy to.
I also think it might be because I changed the background to the Olivia Rodrigo one. I'm going to check out my link tree.
No, not to give you homework.
No. I made a big deal about how I manage my link tree, so I've got to manage my link tree.
All right, and we'll be back in a moment behind the paywall. But for now, that's it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damaged by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.